To which those certificates apply. So they wonder, why do I have to click away the warning that this host, this certificate is invalid? And they do not really understand the issues behind it. In KWallet, which is a single sign-on system in KDE, especially in corporate environments, people prefer to have a single sign-on system, but in reality, it might impose some security issues. Anonymous browsing via Java Anon Proxy, for instance, which has been developed at Dresden University of Technology. It is now integrated in KDE. It is possible to use it, activate it with one click. But the question is, might users be aware of the implication which come with it? In KNewStuff, which is a new library in KDE, which downloads data and enhances applications dynamically and might also download scripts, active contents in the future. We have now implemented digital signatures to prevent forging of the data and of the scripts, but this is only part of the whole scheme, so we need a more secure computing environment. In KDM, many of you might know that it is possible to be able to boot up a computer and log in without entering a password because people know it from other operating systems. So while on the one hand it is quite a nice improvement for the ease of use, it is not really what people might expect from a security point of view. So if anybody of you is interested in discussing these things, please join the KDE in GNOME booth down there, and we are there all day in order to discuss, and it might be nice if we would be able to achieve some kind of result today or maybe even tomorrow in order to improve the security and to eliminate the fact that, or the perceivement of people that KDE and GNOME and other such projects do not have security. We do have a security mailing list, we do have a security team, and we think it's quite important to align these goals with our other goals like user ease of use and user acceptance of the environment. Thanks a lot.
Okay, your clock is better, I see, than mine. Those were 5 minutes. Are there any questions? No questions? Okay. Then please, the second. I can only see your name is AK. Mm-hmm. I hope it's true. And AK will talk about TPP. Mm.
Hello, good morning. My real name is Andreas Krenmer, and I'm doing a quick feature show about a program that I wrote. It's called TPP. Well, what is TPP? TPP means text presentation program. It's a text console application, as you can see. I use it to do this presentation. It's PowerPoint for Sven Gukas or for all text tool users. It has a very simple file format. You only need a text editor to write your presentation and some kind of text console to show that presentation. The first version was a 4-hour egg in the programming language Ruby plus encurses libraries. And then I wrote extensions and extensions and extensions, and then the source script was totally fucked up, so I threw it away and rewrote it with a generic design. Yeah, basic features, you can show simple text. You can also have very long lines that then are wrapped, like this very long line. You can also center the text or show it on the right side. You can also slide it in. Thank you. From the right or... or from the button. Yeah, it's quite nice. Yeah, then different attributes, underlining, reverse, bold. Reverse and bold, here actually there's a bug. I don't know why it is not bold. So this is not bold either, and this should be normal again. I have to check that problem. Okay, the different control keys, you simply use spacebar to go to next slide or to next entry. You can separate the different entries. Yeah, it's pretty self-explaining if you know that all the usual text tools that are around. And of course, you've got a help screen, which you get when you press H or the question key. Okay, that's a source code example. All commands are starting with a double minus and then the command name and then all the parameters. You simply start with author, title, date. You can also use, well, this is today just is replaced by the current date. You can also use a format string like the date tool on the command line. Or you can use any string. And, well, you can start new pages. You can set borders. Just enter your text. It's pretty simple. There are a lot of examples we're having for every feature we have. We have examples in the source code directory. Yeah, shell output. May I show it again? That was quite fast. That is, it's some kind of special output area, and every line starting with a dollar or is well. Print it out like you usually type, and it's very good for showing something you have to type on the text console. Yeah, another thing is that we use Figlet for huge fonts. You can also set other fonts. Yeah, future goals are we should release our refactored version. Currently, the source code of the released version is extremely ugly. More features. And that is more effects that even make PowerPoint look lousy. Stable support for export formats. Currently, we only have a pretty unstable, in the released version, a pretty unstable support for LaTeX export. And in the refactored version, a totally unstable version for Linux stock, HTML or XML support. And yeah, that's it. And thanks to all people, Nico Golde, who is the co-author of TPP, Sven Guggis, who had the initial idea and established contact with Nico, Alfie for bringing TPP into Debian, Arvid for bringing TPP into FreeBSD, so you can use it right now, and Patricia Jung, who wrote a few articles in a few Linux magazines. Yeah, that's it. Any questions? Yes?
No.
I'm a VI user. So not VI. Actually, VI improved, so that's a huge difference. And I'm not really fond of the Emacs key bindings. But probably in a far future where you can configure everything. Then yeah. Yep. Oh, sorry. Yeah, that's I will type it here. It's synflat.at/tpp.html or only simple /tpp should both work. Any other questions?
Okay, I'm sorry, time is up. But I think it's very cool. I will test it tonight. Perhaps I will use it for my own speech tomorrow. The second speech, is there anybody named Aram here? Ah, okay. Please start. Could we reach the goal, please, that the next speaker is here when a speech ends? Next would be Alex Günsche. Okay, then please, hurry up.
Okay, my name is Aram. I'm an artist and I working on the big topic of the relation of computer data space and our normal physical living space, so which everybody's working on somehow. I'm presenting a project in the Blinken area, the Papier Pixel project, which is one of these my projects. And I want to show now here is these bags I'm working on where you can put your mobile phone in and then it's dead. So I have these companies trying you to protect from electrosmog. Producing a lot of cloth and different materials which have a silver surface and different kind of materials. And they want you to put yourself in this, like in your bed or like in front of your window, some foley, and I turn it around. Let's put the device in it and see what happens. And right now I'm only some experiments with mobile phones, and I would like to see what all the other wireless LAN and all the other wireless devices, how they would react. These materials are they are from our 1 gigahertz up to 10, so there are all these different frequencies, and you need different materials to lock them down. You have this, and I have a lot of questions to you, or perhaps there are some people knowing projects, similar projects, and I know there are, I read some articles about military working on, was heißt Tapete? Working on wallpaper, which can be switched between different frequencies, and they have tents. And okay, you have all this security issue, of course. Normal persons always tell me, okay, just turn it off your phone. Why not? And there are these questions, what can a mobile phone do when it's turned off, or is it in standby? And what is possible if it's not only the CIA behind you, but if there are possibilities of manipulating a mobile phone very easy? So these are some of my questions. And if there are some people into this topic, I'll be waiting here after the presentation, or you can find me at the Papier Pixel on the right side at the Blinken area, where I will where I'll be. And the whole thing has a website too, and the project calls silvercell.de, and you can, after the presentation, you can come to me and everybody can try a little bit if his phone goes dead or not. So I think that's all, more or less.
Okay, thank you. Not suffering from paranoia does not mean they are not behind you, of course. But an interesting idea, I think, because most of the mobile phones are not switched off if you switch them off, for your information. Any questions on that topic? No questions? Then please, trusted computing for everybody.
Hello. My name is Alex Günsche. I'm from the organization Protect Privacy, Protect Privacy e.V. in Deutschland. And I'd like to talk about our work. Some of you may know us. Sorry, the slides are in German only because I prepared them in German, but as I see there are so many English guests, I will hold my talk in English. Many of you may know us from againsttcpa.com. It's a platform which occupied with trusted computing quite early. It's very famous on the internet, maybe. And if you know the term TCPA and maybe enter it into Google, you might find out that we are on top, so we have quite lots of information about that topic, and we are occupying with that. Why do we occupy with trusted computing and other topics in this thing? As I have written in German, IT is mostly an area free of law, or as a famous quote says, code is law in cyberspace. Considering that, you know that many users today have computers, they use them, and they are on the internet, they put lots of money into it, they do online banking and so on, but they have no sense for security. And that's why they need to have a bit more security, and that's why firms like IBM, Microsoft think they have to give their definition of security to the users. We are an organization who want to show the lawmakers or Gesetzgeber, which are the legislative part of the government, and the IT, that they have to take their Verantwortung.
Responsibility.
Bitte?
Responsibility.
Yeah, responsibility, right. That they have to take the responsibility, and we want to clear up users about what is security and how they may protect themselves. The topics of our organization are, most important, trusted computing. Furthermore, we occupy with RFID, which may be a term for most of you too, and digital privacy, which is more like privacy on the net, but we do occupy with all kinds of privacy. But mostly, as we said, on trusted computing. We have been working on documentations on the topic because many of the informations to have on the internet are quite old, are polemic and so on. As I wrote once again, against CCPA may be one of them because we have quotes from Ross Anderson, you may know, but they are quite good documentations, but they have facts in them which are simply not true. Or they are a bit exaggerated because they assume facts which are not actually given. We are putting together facts which we have researched from sources from IBM, from Microsoft, HP, and so on. We have been reading documentations of known scientists. Okay, Ross Anderson, too. He's not too bad, of course. But also of people have made documentations more in technical sense about trusted computing. And so you may find in our platform, www.protectprivacy.org. And now we have launched a new version yesterday, and it's only two documentations by now. English, they will follow. But you are anyway invited to take part in our forums, to come to our mailing lists, to participate in our web chat. And we would very much appreciate if you would come, inform at our place, and maybe even support, help us by maybe translating text or sending us links, providing more information, telling us who talks when about trusted computing. And it would be very fine to support our work and spread the word about trusted computing and technologies that don't only affect the users who know about it, like us maybe, but every user. Thank you so far. Are there any questions?
Any questions? Yes, please. Can we have a microphone? Or can you go to the micro, please?
Or tell me, I'll repeat it. Sorry, once again.
Please use the mic. Please use the mic. Thank you.
From the research you've done, who or what is the biggest threat to privacy so far?
The biggest threat?
Biggest threat to privacy.
Concerning trusted computing, or what do you mean?
On all the areas of work that you're doing.
You mean trusted computing, or do you mean privacy? In
both.
Yes, our main topic, trusted computing. There are many threats to privacy from different directions, such as RFID, for example, or data mining and all kinds. It surrounds us, but there are other organizations who occupy with this aspects of privacy invasion, and our main topic is trusted computing. So if you'd ask me, I wouldn't be able to tell you what is the most infringing act of against privacy, but our topic is trusted computing. So we occupy with all, but we don't evaluate them, you see? If that was your question, I don't know. Is that an answer to your question? Sorry. But I come down, we may talk about that. Okay? Thanks so far.
Okay. Any other questions? Thank you. Okay, and next is Anselm Garbe, which talks about improved GUI concepts. Who talks about? Okay, my English is not very good, I think. Who will talk about?
Yes.
Sometimes. Doesn't it work? Bloop. I think it should happen. Oh, okay, duplicate or something like that. Yeah, it does work.
Yes. Hello, my name is Anselm Garbe, and I want to present you the Window Manager Improved project, which I founded based on an idea back in 2001, in the October of 2003. Most people are asking why yet another X11 Window Manager, and the reason I founded this project are my own and many other indispositions of other people, which can be summarized in 4 points. Most desktop environments like KDE or GNOME or the classical window manager have as target group beginner users. This results in an inefficient mouse usage and the lack of keyboard control. Most classical desktop environments waste most of your time or much time each day with window adjustment. There's no intelligent window adjustment in most classical desktop environments, and most desktop environments are very slow. These are the reasons why I founded the Window Manager Improved project. What is Window Manager Improved and why is it improved? It's yet another window manager which attempts to combine the best features of maybe famous, some of you may know them, the window managers Iron, LastVM, or Red Poison. And all of these kinds of window managers provide some features, but no of these window managers provide those features I found necessary. Thus, the target group of the Window Manager Improved are experienced users, hackers, or system administrators. As I told you, I founded the project last year, and the implementation of the first version of the first generation was in C++. The next generation I am currently working on, and there was a growing community which is also working on this version, is WMII, which means Window Manager Improved Second Edition. It's a re-implementation in C, and it uses the old first generation as forebild. Okay, it's based on the first generation of WMI, but adds some interesting features of the ACME programming environment of the Plan 9 operating system. And it will provide more eye candy because it is based on the Cairo vector graphic library. Well, what are the features? Window Manager Improved supports overlapping window management, control and management operations are accessible via shortcuts. It supports tabbed window management. tiled non-overlapping window management, and with WMII there will be a new configuration and inter-process communication interface which has not been seen so far in the classical window management or classical desktop environment world. So what's overlapping window management? Here you see in the background tiled or adjustment of some windows, and in foreground you see a so-called borderless window which floats in front. What's tab window management? You see we can add several instances of terminals into one window. And last but not least, what's tiled window management? Like Eon, you can split windows in each direction, and the windows are automatically adjusted in a non-overlapping manner. And for those of you who know the last WM, you can emulate the behavior also with WMI. So,
I'm sorry, your time is up. Thank you.
Here you see where you can meet me, and if there are any questions, feel free to ask me in the Hack Center or visit this seat. Yes, thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Just trying out, I think.
Yes?
Yes, I'm in the mic, please.
How do applications with many small windows like the GIMP or a similar look
they,
like?
They are classical floating windows, and they are handled like in any classical window manager.
Okay, then I think we should... another question, the last one, please.
Why did you rewrite in C?
Because of long compile time issues, and I think C is more performant than C++. And it's quite easier.
I don't think it's more performant, but we can discuss this later. I will come, okay. The next one should be a talk about a new Python VM implementation. I'm missing the speaker. Holger Krekel, please. Okay. Next one would be NN, double N.
So is there anything special you need to do here?
MacOS?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay drücken. Oh. Dann irgendwas anderes als Keynote. Und hier oben Bildschirm. Ach, du hast den nicht eingeblendet, wie nett Display ist.
Ja, ja, ist klar. Das kenne ich schon. Und dann?
Show Display in Menübar. Und drück einmal auf Detect.
Ja. Gestern war das aber immediately.
Jetzt hast du wahrscheinlich zwei Displays.
Genau.
Ah, nein, du hast eins. Wunderbar. We're losing much time with the beamers.
So, I'm Holger Krekel. I'm going to talk about PyPy very quickly. PyPy is a novel Python implementation, and it's written in Python itself almost completely. And the idea is to translate this to low-level languages. First, at the moment, we are targeting C, Java, and Lisp, whereas the latter Lisp is obviously not that low-level, but anyway. And a figure that many don't really know what Python is about. It's used by some 14% of developers I've read in a recent survey worldwide. And I'm just going to give you a very quick introduction. So you have a Python interactive interpreter, and here I define a function that just returns the value plus one. And it's interesting to know that Python has a virtual machine, so that you can actually display at runtime what is going on here when I execute this function. And what happens, these are the opcodes, pretty readable. It loads in a fast array. It loads the variable x that got passed to the function you see above. Then it adds a constant 1, and it returns the value. Another thing is that if you actually look at, you can access all the internals just from the normal CPython interpreter, and you can see there's a code object, and you can see that's also a module I've written, the various parts of the code object. That's something you can also get at in Java, but it's a bit more, you use the reflection API, which is a bit more convoluted to get at. And you see, like, well, the argument count, and you guess what all these values mean. And you also see that that's also an aspect that many may not know. Python is strongly typed, but it's dynamically typed compared to Java, which is statically typed. So you have to actually declare all the types that you're using all the time. So PyPy is going to re-implement all this in a very high level language, which is Python itself. That's a similar approach to Squeak and Self. Squeak, by the way, is going to have, I heard, at 8 o'clock in the evening, a nice talk with a 3D environment, virtual machine. It's a kind of a similar project, and some of the ideas we are reusing in PyPy. So what are we going to do different than CPython? First of all, we have everything in a high-level language, so we actually have a description of the Python interpreter. What we want to do is that we want to have memory models and threading models configurable even at runtime. So we want to have specific engines for gaming engines, for databases, and all this that resolve some of the limitations that CPython at the moment has. Also, what we're going to do is, some of you may know Psyco, which is a specializing just-in-time compiler. It's written in C with some kind of a hack of continuations. We want to do that, want to generate from our Python source code a just-in-time compiler that actually specializes. One of the leaders in the research area in our group, he has the goal of actually being having a very high-level language being faster than C. We can discuss this maybe in the evening at Squeak, because they share a similar idea. And what we also want to do is we want to have orthogonal persistence. That means objects m-mapped into memory and all kinds of neat tricks in that area, so that all the objects you're handling are automatically persistent in a very performant way. And this is the URL where the project is taking place. And I mentioned in a talk yesterday, it was a one-hour talk, that we got funding from the EU for 1 year now. 2 years, sorry. Do I have a bit more time?
No, I'm very sorry. This was one minute. 1 minute above the time.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions? Oh. If there are no questions, then there are many questions.
Okay,
thank you. Then now we will hear advanced hacking in the demo environment, and the next one will be sexual salvation from Mr. Burkhardt. Don't have a forename here.
Yeah, hi, my name is Nyung, and I didn't know that these Latin talks are held in English, so I have some support. I want to introduce some methods that are not that usual in street protests, because, for example, at the beginning of the year, Verbot in Bielefeld organized a demonstration against RFID chips, or the misuse of RFID chips. This street protest was these kind of classical protests. And some people think that the classical street protests are quite boring. And in the 80s, I think there were some people who like to do street protests that are not that usual. And I think
yeah, Actually, people have been thinking about how to make demonstrations in the real world a bit more colorful ever since people began to demonstrate for the rights or to fight the system or whatever. And in the 80s, there was a group based in Berlin, and when the World Bank met in Berlin, there was an event called Citizens Give a Round of Applause to Bankers. So when the bankers arrived at the airport, everyone was clapping their hands, and in the evening, people gathered in front of the hotels and sang a goodnight song, a lullaby to the bankers. So it basically, the idea is to go beyond the boring demonstration, you know, where you just walk the streets and maybe shout a few slogans, and at the end everyone is bored. We call it large demo in German. And some of the new ideas spawned from the anti-globalization movement, and I think the first time was in Prague when it was tried out.
Yeah, in Prague in the year 2000, there were some demonstration members who thought they should do something new, and they created something. The name is called Pink and Silver, the Pink and Silver Block, and they are dressed completely in pink and silver dresses, and having these pompons for cheerleading.
Puschel, and as we say in German.
In Germany we say Puschel, and shouting slogans and cheers against the system or against the globalization. And this is what we want to do today. I think after the lightning talks, I have some material, pink and silver stuff. And we want to, we want to invite you to join us, to do some pompons and puschel and shout some slogans. And yeah, I think Jens...
We have collected some ideas on what slogans you could use in future demonstrations against privacy problems or whatever affects computer nerds.
One slogan of Jens, come on, just like in German.
Oh, we have written it down, but I don't think I can remember anything. Maybe.
Keine macht den Drähten.
Ach so, no. It's, alle macht den Drähten, of course.
Okay.
I'm sorry, time is up.
Time is up. Okay, if you want to produce something for a creative, colorful demonstration and want to think about making demonstrations more colorful, please join us afterwards and we will have some fun.
Okay. Okay. Thank you very much. I am looking forward to see both of you with pushels. Now, Florian Burkhardt. Does it work? It also on Mac, so I could help.
Geht's?
Falsch. Synchronize? Synchronize? Escape? Hast du's? Ah, ein altes Mac OS, scheiße. Synchronisation einschalten. Okay.
Sorry for the delay.
Hey, we are good in time. That works.
Okay, so in the next 5 minutes, I would like to race you through some biology and answer the most important question of why we as humans or as human population have sex. At least some of us might have sex. And I want to start with something familiar. Is an example, a very, very simplified example of a buffer overflow. Imagine a web server, and imagine that web server gets fed an URL, which is really very, very, very long, and somehow that web server's buffer gets overwritten, and the remaining piece of the ASCII string, which in a word processor wouldn't do anything, ends up in a piece of RAM and gets executed. And the point I would like to make here is that it is the the system of the web server or the intrinsic mechanisms that make this string poisonous. And if you stop thinking bits and bytes and start thinking proteins, I would like to switch to an example of Entrex. And it's not because of its geek value, but just because there has been so much attention and attention in the form of money being thrown at it in terms of research. And please don't worry about the funny names. It's just the names how they, well, were just given by the researchers. And there are actually three Entrex proteins. Two of them are lethal, and one is the door opener. And the door opener is called protective antigen. And in a kind of port attack, it attaches very, very specifically. They are all proteins. It attaches very specifically to a protein of the cell, which is called Entrex toxin receptor. It's a bit ironic because that protein's function is obviously not to let Entrex into the cell, but it has a different function, but the function is not known. And now it's true. Now what happens next is that this protective antigen gets cut by a cell protease. You can imagine or just visualize the protease as a kind of Swiss Army knife. It does a lot of things, and here it does something it not really should do, but it does anyway. It cuts a bit of the protective antigen off, and the stuff that is still stuck to the Entrex toxin receptor actually makes a hole into the cell wall. So these are all mechanisms which are not originally designed by the cell, but they are exploited by the Bacillus anthracis and by the Entrex toxin. So you're sex. Yeah, I'm coming to the sex now. I mean, that's a very, very important question. What does this have to do with sex? So we are under evolutionary pressure from a lot of bacteria, viruses, and all other sorts of pathogens, worms and stuff. And this evolutionary pressure, I mean, they hack us all the time. And right now in this room, there are plenty of viruses which attack you on mucosa and your body and everything. So this is a very, very high evolutionary pressure on us as a human species or on the animals as well. And especially viruses have a very high mutation rate, so you need to adapt to them very efficiently. And the major line of defense is our immune system. And here, it's the antibody diversity that makes a defense successful or not. Now, how can you make your antibody diversity, diverse? That's the answer to your question. Only sex, or more specifically sexual reproduction, can ensure a very thorough mixture of your genes. I mean, there are so many ways to reproduce. Cells, for example, just divide, or bacteria just have cloning. They just divide themselves. You end up with lots of clones. Plants can do offshoots, Sprossung in Deutsch. So you can just cut off a piece of a plant, put it into the ground, and on some plants it works, not all. You have a new plant growing. And, we can't do this, obviously. And mixing is achieved, first through random partner selection. Well, only for the first children. I mean, I'm not suggesting random partner selection every time. And the other most important step is that you get half your genes from your father and half your genes from your mother. And during this step, all your genetic information gets thoroughly mixed. And all this is hidden under the application layer. And No, I mean, seriously, we do not note this. We just have the urge to have sex. And this is just an example how efficient everything works. And it is really the evolutionary pressure of fighting viruses. And to transfer that strategy to computers, you would have to say that computers should have more sex or at least mix their code very efficiently. And, well, this is all I want to have to say. So, keep on fighting the viruses.
Okay, thank you very much. I have the first question. You're talking about silicon. Is there a carbonized version?
No, but we are carbon-based life forms, no?
Yes. Okay, forget that. Okay. The first real question, please. Do we have a mic? Here's the mic.
I can hear you, so I could repeat that question.
Oh, we have mics. We do.
Hello. I have a remark to make. You stated that antibody diversity is made out of that genetic, of the mixture of genetic material during sex. That is quite not true at the moment, because antibody diversity is generated through translation and transcription of the RNA for antibodies.
Yes, and so where does the RNA?
It is already established, so we don't need any more sex to establish good antibodies.
That's not entirely
the
true.
The true point is that we really need sex to keep evolution going, and that's a good point.
Well, you keep about you talk about the RNA, but where does the RNA come from? It comes from the DNA, and that diversity on your DNA level. Well, you're right. There are lots of mechanisms that mix up the RNA part, but the cards you shuffle are determined by what you get from your father and your mother. And when you look at indigenous populations, North America Indians, when they encountered smallpox, they were basically wiped out because their population as a whole were not trained on these particular pathogens. And this is a problem. But yes, you're right. There's so many ways in the cell to mix the information. But it's just a lightning talk, so I couldn't go into details. Yes.
So basically you're saying we should fork more often. Is that true?
Well,
fork is not sex, of course.
It's not really sex, no. No, cloning is not
having
sex, right?
Only one-parent process.
One-parent process, yeah.
I mean, we are talking
but
about
anyway,
evolution here, and
yeah,
I mean, it's a very long time frame.
But no, look around. I don't see too many of the, you know, the other kind of... So I suggest that you go down to the Hexen room and repeat your talk. Thank you very much.
Hey, what's up? Of course, people, we have completely 5 minutes for talking about sex here. No other questions? Okay. Please, do you try NetBSD and type in man sex? It's the fork alternative. Okay. Then the last speech already. Subwikis and Matthias Manzel. Thank you.
Matthias Manzel, hello.
Matthias?
Yeah, Matthias. I discovered Wiki in summer 2003 and ever since write on it with heart. On the Wiki, everybody can do whatever Z wants. And Z obviously wants to make a Wikipedia pretty well known. And hundreds and thousands of far smaller Wikis about thousands and one things not too known yet. The sum of all Wiki I call Wikilandia. Wikilandia is vast, I realized when wandering it. I took my time. It seemed to me like what it is all about isn't less than the reconstruction of the human brain on the meta level, globally, as one common and single meta-organism. Wiki is the super intelligent newborn child, and it's fun for me to participate on the creation of connections between the neurons of its common brain, this hive mind, this big thing, the individuals and the communities of individuals, say the wikis they work on are about to create. It's just the first beginning, what we see now. People soon will understand that it's no mere dream to create a non-corrupt global virtual currency replacing bank-soaked currencies, or, just as important, create a decentralized common world government. People will do such on Wiki. They will do it much faster than we all think. Ideally, each neuron in the brain can make a synapse to any other neuron in the brain. There are two directions, an inwards and an outwards. Inwards mean you can create a wiki within a wiki. This feature exists on some wiki software already. I call it wiki hiving. First, wiki hives are growing rampantly. On OddWiki, it takes about 15 seconds to create a new wiki, and you can do it without a login. The XWiki hive already has more than 1,000 wikis on it. Fractality, that means wikis within wikis within wikis, is possible, though not enabled yet on any of the existing hives. Outwards, that's most of all the wiki node. A wiki node is a page on a wiki named wiki node. Traditionally, wikis have a face, a main entrance door. On the front page, you read what the wiki is about, and you find options where to go next. The wiki node now is the piece of corridor right in front of this entrance door. You see the main door there, and it takes only one step to enter, but you also see the other pieces of the infinite corridor from right in front of the doors of the neighbors. Online, we are all neighbors, and we have a choice. On Wiki, we, within our community, decide about our neighbors. The different pieces of corridor always link to other pieces of the corridor. Wiki nodes link to Wiki nodes. Surfing them is like roller skating the big corridor. You see many people's doors, but you do not enter. City wikis are about cities. There's a Seattle wiki, a London wiki, and so on, quite a bunch of them already. University wikis are for universities. I started on node wikis for these kind of wikis. The node wiki for university wikis is for no specific university. It is for university wikis in general. These have home pages on the node wiki. If now the university wiki develops a brilliant idea about an application of their wiki in the university, they can communicate it to other university wikis on the node wiki. Make one page to say it instead of hundreds.
Okay. Mathis?
Mm-hmm.
5 minutes up. Thank you very much. For this speech. And Wiki says me that, of course, all of these speeches are mentioned in the public wiki of the Congress. And if you want to find out again the names of the people who did those speeches, you'll find them there. Thank you very much for listening.